This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, racial justice editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. When President Joe Biden touted his signature bill, the Inflation Reduction Act, in 2022, he and others touted it as the single largest investment in climate and energy in American history. But the fine print revealed otherwise. Now, a new report by Oil Change International analyzes emissions under the Inflation Reduction Act and finds that it is worsening climate change and exacerbating environmental justice. My guest is one of the authors of the report, Lauren Stockman, Research Co-Director at Oil Change International. Welcome to the program, Lauren.
Hey, it's great to be here.
So the title of the report, Biden's Fossil Fuel Fail, How U.S. Oil and Gas Supply Rises Under the Inflation Reduction Act, Exacerbating Environmental Justice, is a mouthful, but it actually summarizes very nicely what is at stake here. How is it that we have this Democratic president who touted himself as a climate champion and who managed to get this bill through that was supposed to be huge progress on the issue of climate change? And it's turning out to be not just not progress, but the opposite.
Well, I think what it points to is that the Biden administration's been, pretty good at supporting renewable energy in terms of wind and solar. And, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act does have a lot of positive aspects on the on what we call the demand side in terms of supporting clean energy technologies like wind, solar, EVs, and batteries. But what this administration has failed to do, not just in the Inflation Reduction Act, but really throughout its tenure so far, is it's failing to stand up to the oil and gas industry and the fossil fuel industry more widely. So the Inflation Reduction Act really didn't have any articles to address the growth in oil and gas production that has been ongoing really for the last 15 to 20 years since the beginning of the fracking boom. And as a result, projections of what will happen to oil and gas production under the Inflation Reduction Act show that it will continue to grow. It fails to put oil and gas production in reverse. And that's really what frontline communities, environmental justice communities in regions like the Gulf Coast in Texas and Louisiana, as well as places like Appalachia that have been living with this fracking boom and this massive build out of infrastructure, pipelines, processing plants, LNG export plants, etc. This is exactly the issue that they face and that is not being addressed for them in the Inflation Reduction Act.
Tell me about the data that you analyzed. It was data that was previously unpublished from something called the Rhodium Group's Climate Deck. Tell me about this.
Yeah, that's right. We didn't. This wasn't our data. We honed in on the Rhodium Group's data. The Rhodium Group is a think tank. They've been producing analysis of U.S. emissions and energy production and consumption for a number of years now, particularly since the signing of the Paris Agreement in 2015. And every year they produce a report called Taking Stock, looking at how, you know, where emissions and energy production and consumption is going in the U.S. And this year, for the first time, they were able to incorporate the impacts of the Inflation Reduction Act into their model. Now, again, it's a model. It's not, there's no guarantee that things will turn out exactly like the model, but the model is, you know, is well developed and, it gives us a pretty good idea of where things are going. So in their report in June, they highlighted that the Inflation Reduction Act wouldn't quite go far enough for the U.S. to meet its emissions goals that it's committed to, and that more work was needed. They also highlighted in the report that the gas production and consumption in the U.S. was going to do something they described as decoupling. And that means, traditionally, as gas demand or oil demand has grown, production has tried to keep up. And particularly since the fracking boom and the US has become, you know, one of the world's biggest oil and gas producers, you know, demand and production have kind of been more or less in lockstep. What they noticed was that while the Inflation Reduction Act, because of its support for wind and solar in particular, gas demand, particularly in the power sector, where wind and solar would have an impact for producing electricity, demand would go down, but the production would continue to rise. And this, you know, this was something that concerned us greatly, and we requested additional data from the Rhodium Group, because in the report they mostly kind of chart emissions. They don't kind of get into the detail of oil and gas production and how much is going to be produced and consumed. So we requested that additional data from the model, and when we got it back, we were shocked to learn that U.S. gas exports would double by 2035 under the model, despite a decline in demand of about 15-16%, production would rise around 7% by 2035, and you know, much of the difference would be exported to global markets, leading to a doubling of exports. So, you know, it was kind of digging deeper into the data that really revealed kind of you know, how much the oil and gas industry is unaffected by the Inflation Reduction Act. It's continuing business as usual. The Inflation Reduction Act also has a lot of supports for dangerous distractions like carbon capture and storage and hydrogen, things that will use actually more fossil fuels while doing little to address emissions.
Right. There was a time when clean coal was that, and then it was, it was the liquid nitrogen, LNG. We've seen crude oil being touted as alternatives, transitional fuels, and now carbon capture is the sort of the latest piece of magical thinking that we're supposed to be swallowing. Of this, you know, so it sounds as though what you're saying is, demand is falling here in the United States. We're seeing, you know, greater popularity in for things like electric vehicles. There's greater awareness. People are seeing unfolding climate change. But so the oil and gas companies have just taken their markets abroad. But these are American companies. These are U.S. based multinational companies that are simply taking their markets elsewhere and are being unaffected by the climate bill, the bill that was supposed to rein in climate change.
That's right. And, you know, that export boom has been going on for a while. You know, we lifted the ban on crude oil exports at the end of 2015. And the U.S. began to export LNG, liquefied gas, since 2016. And that's been growing very fast. And the number of export terminals on the Gulf Coast has increased exponentially, both for crude oil and petroleum products, as well as gas. And those impacts, the impacts of that infrastructure, that massive infrastructure build out that involves, you know, pipelines crisscrossing the country to bring those products to the export terminals, and these massive export terminals that themselves consume massive amounts of energy and produce massive amounts of pollution. That's something that has been growing since 2015, 2016. But what we were surprised to find was that the Inflation Reduction Act would do very little to stem that growth. And that growth is projected to continue into the 2030s. And therefore, the communities who have been, you know, finding that infrastructure and living with the pollution, the asthma, the cancer, the various health impacts of living around the oil and gas industry's infrastructure, including the petrochemical industry that is, you know, very closely connected with oil and gas. They, you know, rather than finding relief from the Inflation Reduction Act as we are supposed to transition to cleaner energy sources, you know, I think most people expect that that means the oil and gas industry is going to go into decline. And that's not what this data shows. And, you know, it really shows that the Biden administration really needs to stand up to the oil and gas lobbyists and the oil and gas industry and start, you know, clamping down on exports, on leases on federal lands, on permitting more pipelines, more export terminals, more projects. Unfortunately, we've seen this administration do very little to stem that flow. And, you know, it's clear that that's what's going to be needed if we're going to not only transition to clean energy, but bring justice to these communities that have borne this burden for so many decades already.
And I want to correct, it's a liquefied natural gas, not nitrogen gas, as I said erroneously earlier. So, Lauren, when we look at the way in which the United States is moving, there's a, you know, the U.S. has been one of the largest per capita producers of and consumers also of fossil fuels. Now, and we sort of, the rest of the world caught up to that. The large countries like India and Brazil and China became large consumers. Now we're seeing the U.S. public go in a different direction. But U.S. oil companies are still taking advantage of a boom happening elsewhere. They're laughing all the way to the bank. How much of American tax dollars continues to prop up this industry, even though it is moving away? Because we know that you know, these companies get massive tax breaks, they get subsidies. Mm-hmm. If there's demand that's dropping here in the U.S., at the very least, shouldn't they be stripped of all of these tax incentives and breaks that they get?
Well, we've been arguing that for a number of years, not only based around, you know, the move to exporting to foreign markets, but just the fact that, you know, an industry, you know, subsidies are generally considered useful for, you know, new technologies, new businesses that the government wants to support, and they need a leg up to kind of, you know, get a foothold in the marketplace. But oil and gas has been around nearly 150 years. And some of the tax breaks that the U.S. oil and gas industry enjoyed today have been around literally since the early 20th century. So, you know, this isn't a new industry that needs a leg up in order to, you know, get a foothold in the market and to bring its product to consumers. This is an industry that actually we've been we've been needing to put into decline for a couple of decades now and failing to do so. So, you know, the truth is that while there's been various attempts to estimate how much the U.S. oil and gas industry takes in tax credits and tax breaks and other subsidies, it's the truth is that nobody really knows, because there's very little transparency. The IRS is not bound to disclose facts and figures on which companies are getting what and how much is being spent. There are estimates in the tens of billions of dollars a year. But, you know, this is a very opaque area. And, you know, the industry has done a very good job over the years in protecting not only its access to those tax credits and subsidies, but in protecting the data and information that would help us to expose just how much they're getting and how urgent it is to repeal.
Lauren, you and I are talking as the latest Conference of Parties on Climate Change, the UN-sponsored international conferences that take place every year, multiple times, is unrolling in Dubai this time, Dubai and the United Arab Emirates. COP28 is taking place. This is where governments come from all over the world traditionally to try to come to some agreement. And you had mentioned the Paris Accord earlier, 2015, where supposedly groundbreaking international pact was signed. This year, the Biden administration, well, President Joe Biden, it's being reported, is not going to be attending COP28, which on the one hand might be seen as a, you know, thumbing of the nose at international cooperation on climate change. On the other hand, this conference is being held in Dubai in a Gulf Arab monarchy. And we've just seen reports that the governments in the Emirates government was planning on using the conference as cover for its own private oil deals. So, you know, maybe Biden's absence is appropriate. What do you think about the way in which these COPs are going?
Well, I mean, specifically with this COP, it's very unfortunate that the president is the CEO of the national oil company. It's clear that he has, you know, conflicts of interest and motives other than, you know, delivering the most ambitious climate deal that we can get. What's at stake? What I think the climate movement partners and colleagues are pushing for at the conference is clear language in the final text of the conference that calls for a phase out of fossil fuels. And this is the issue that, you know, it's the same issue that we're finding with the Biden administration. They like to talk about emissions. And you know, by talking about emissions, they can talk about these dangerous distractions like carbon capture, direct air capture, and things like this. What they are failing to do is to come to terms with the fact that the only way to achieve the climate goals that we're pursuing, that we must pursue, is to wind down the fossil fuel industry. There is no alternative to that. There may be some technology. Yeah, sorry.
So talking about emissions is a downstream solution instead of talking about production
and
processing of oil, which would be an upstream approach to it.
That's right. I mean, that's right. There is this kind of fantasy that the oil and gas industry in particular can carry on business as usual by bolting on some additional technologies that may or may not effectively capture some emissions. And this is a fantasy. And, you know, we're going to see a push, I think, from the presidency and from the industry and some governments to, you know, talk about abated fossil fuels. This idea that, you know, we should phase out unabated fossil fuels. So, you know, we should phase out coal and gas plants that don't have CCS, but, you know, we should leave room for these things. And I think that's just kind of dodging the real issue and ignoring the facts. We need to phase out the vast, vast majority of fossil fuels, abated or unabated. These technologies are not well proven. They're likely to increase the cost of energy for consumers because they require more capital, more infrastructure, and more energy. The thing is about a carbon capture plant is it needs to be fueled by something. And in most cases, that's more coal or more gas that's fueling that process of capturing the CO2 and compressing it and shoving it down a pipeline to bury it then underground. All of that takes additional energy, which adds additional cost. The industry has been very good at getting more subsidies for this this dangerous distraction, and you know, civil society is pushing back. You are going to see strong pushback at the COP against these dangerous distractions being prioritized, and you're going to see a call for an unequivocal phase out of fossil fuels. That's what we need to see coming out of the COP. It remains to be seen whether this presidency can deliver that.
And of course, the United Arab Emirates is not a country that's very friendly to political protests. So I imagine that any protest that's taking place is going to be happening under the, you know, within the official halls of power. And the COPs have been very, very, the Conference of Parties have been very, very effective in recent years at curtailing the ability of civil society to present their concerns from the outside in, and just really making it a smaller and smaller tent, which, again, sort of keeps revealing that in the end, it's not the place necessarily where climate solutions are actually going to be tackled, sadly.
I think that's right. And it is, you know, it is a very difficult set of circumstances when this conference is held in certain places that you know, are authoritarian or do not value democracy. That's not to say that there isn't, you know, that there isn't potential for some positive change to come out of the conference. I think that's what you know, my colleagues and others in the climate movement are going there to fight for, and they will do their best to get the, you know, to get their voices heard. And it will be interesting to see how the UAE deals with criticism and protests. You know, there's been a lot of critical stories come out recently. One that you mentioned earlier about, you know, the national oil company kind of seeking oil deals through the hosting of the conference. So they've already faced a lot of criticism. We will see, you know, how they deal with that over the conference.
Right. Well, I appreciate your optimism, Lauren. Give out a website for Oil Change International and where people can see the report that we were discussing earlier.
Yeah, you can find the report on our website, which is actually www.priceofoil.org. Priceofoil.org. I think if you just go to that homepage and look at our report section, you'll find the Biden fossil fuel fails report.
And we'll post a link to that from our website as well. Lauren, thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Lauren Stockman, Research Co-Director at Oil Change International. He's one of the authors of the new report, Biden's Fossil Fuel Fail, How U.S. Oil and Gas Supply Rises Under the Inflation Reduction Act, Exacerbating Environmental Injustice. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. I'm the Racial Justice Editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents, Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org. Watch it on Free Speech TV. And listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.